team to working alone. To truly be part of the team, you have to use them as more than just a distraction while you have your own fight. I have no doubt you could have conducted some version of what you did here by yourself, but by integrating your abilities, you developed a reliable, effective, and efficient strategy. Thanks, Jason said. I was kind of waiting for the turnaround there where you start telling me what I did wrong. You weren't perfect by any means, Henrietta said. But you're coming along. Your rapid improvement tells me that Humphrey knew what he was doing when he put this team together. There's a lot of potential here. The team's route had taken them north from Greenstone, up the coast, inland over the sands of what Jason knew as the Namby Desert, and into the Kalahari. There was more plant life, patchy and dry though it was, with mountains dotting the horizon. Jason had been looking to his map as they travelled, which unveiled space as he passed through it. He watched as their path formed a loop of revealed space, his eyes always turning back to the point the loop would close. Because of his map ability, Jason had been playing Team Navigator. One of the map's functions, he discovered, was to mark waypoints, even to areas that were still veiled. He could use the waypoint to mark out a route and use the minimap feature the map gained when it evolved to keep them on track. As navigator, Jason occupied the other front seat of the skimmer, next to Clive, who was driving. When the loop had almost closed entirely, he leaned over at Clive and talked over the sound of air rushing through the magic ring at the back of the skimmer. "Can we take a little detour?" Jason asked. "Should only be about an hour out of our way for the skimmer." "What is it you want to see?" Henrietta asked from behind him. "Some blood cultist tried to sacrifice me and my friends in this big ritual chamber, inside a mountain. I wouldn't mind taking another look, now that I'm not terrified out of my wits and I've spent more than a few hours in this world." "I definitely want to see that," Humphrey said. "I've heard the story, and I'd love to see where it happened." Henrietta looked at the others and got a general consensus of nods. "All right then," she said. "Let's go take a look." The entrance was a cave that was easy to miss from any kind of distance, but they spotted the remnants of a Magic Society expedition. Trash, debris, and a couple of abandoned tents that seemed to have suffered a monster attack made for an obvious marker.
"That's the problem with these expeditions in the desert," Clive said, examining the tents after the skimmer pulled up. "There's not a lot out here, so they tend to attract monsters."
"When did the Magic Society come here?" Jason asked.
"Right after Rufus gave his report to the Adventure Society," Clive said. "After hearing what happened, the Adventure Society referred it to us so we could assess the site for potential future threats."
"Did you find any?" Neil asked. "Might be worth knowing before we go in there."
"No," Clive said. "Ultimately, it was just an ordinary, if impressive, ritual room. If anything, the main value is historical, like the Sky River Aqueduct or the Order of the Reaper complex we found under the swamp. The ritual room here predates the settlement of Greenstone. It seems like the Vane family simply found it and made use of it."
They went in through the cave, down the long tunnel into the mountain. Glowstones were pulled out to light the way. "The cult had these strange red lanterns that washed everything the colour of blood," Jason said. "I don't know if they had some kind of purpose or were just aesthetic." They emerged into the main chamber. The stairs, like carved pegs jutting out of the wall, wound their way up and around the cylindrical chamber. There were larger platforms at cardinal points as the stairway went up. On the floor level, what used to be the pool of blood-like liquid still occupied most of the space. It was now drained, reminding Jason of an empty swimming pool at some abandoned house. "The pit was full of this nasty liquid," Jason told the others as he walked over to look inside. It was about as deep as Jason was tall, a featureless pit of dark stone. There was a light shining out of it that washed everything red, like those lanterns I mentioned.
"It smells like blood in here," Sophie said.
"Not like it used to," Jason said. "The air was thick and heavy with it then. I was pretty woozy because I'd already been knocked out a few times that day."
"The Magic Society team examined and disposed of the liquid," Clive said. "It seemed to be mostly water, mixed with various alchemical materials. There was also a lot of blood in it." The team estimated at least a dozen people died to produce it. The report described the substance as reminiscent of blood that refused to dry or clot, and was extremely unnerving, even with the magic within it gone dormant.
The Adventure Society made their own investigation, Jason said. I was qualified to look at the report after I reached 3 stars. The Vane family had been preying on the towns in the region for years and passing it off as monster attacks.
I can't believe they were really eating people, Neil said. I knew Landomir Vane. Not well, but I saw him at social events.
I knew him as well, Clive said. We shared the same magical specialty. I thought he was a genius, seeming to pluck these incredible innovations out of the air. Now we know he was getting them from the Builder cult all along. Such a waste.
Clive shook his head in disgust.
All that knowledge from beyond our world, and this is what he uses it for.
Jason walked them through the events of that day, as best as he remembered them. This was the platform where they left me. They dropped Gary first because he was the heavy one. If you look over the edge, you'll see the doorway on the other side of the room. I jumped off the edge of the platform and used my cloak to float down. All I had was that and my dark vision power. My intention had been to run like hell, and I almost did.
But you came back, Humphrey said.
To hear Gary tell it, Jason said, it was some brilliant scheme to lure off some of the cultists. The truth is, I really was running, but I was unconscious when I was brought to the chamber and had no idea what was at the end of that tunnel. I knew I would need help if I didn't want to be recaptured 10 minutes later. Also, I'd been whacked around the brain too many times. My judgment was compromised. They continued up the stairs. This is where Rufus had a sword fight with Landomir Vane's sister. I don't remember her name.
Alicia, Neil said.
Sure, Jason said. Anyway, she had a sword, but all Rufus had was this evil magic gardening trowel that I found at the Vane estate. In the end, he threw it to Gary, who chucked it through Alicia's throat. It was so quick and smooth, no one saw it coming. Jason looked thoughtfully at Henrietta. Actually, it's what Henrietta's been talking about this whole time, knowing what your teammate will do and trusting them to do it.
Then perhaps you should take my instruction more seriously, Henrietta said.
They went all the way to the top, the platform once holding the altar, now empty. Jason walked up to the edge and looked down with a sigh. The first time I ever deliberately killed a person was in this room. Landomir Vane was the first back at the estate, but that just kind of happened when we were struggling over a knife.
These people would have killed you too, Humphrey said. That's the whole reason they brought you here.
I know, Jason said. I don't regret the way it turned out, but this is the first place I ever decided to kill a person, and then did it. He turned back and gave Sophie a sad smile. You probably think I'm a spoiled fool, he said to her. The life you've had, and here I am complaining about the things you probably did far younger.
You're definitely a fool, Sophie said, giving him a wry smile. And yes, I had to make that decision younger than you. That doesn't make it easy, though, whenever it happens.
It was bandits for me, Humphrey said. I'd only just gotten my essences and was still training. I was out with my cousin Ernest, who was looking through monster notices for something I could handle. We were on a hunt and came across this trade caravan fleeing from bandits. Their leader was bronze rank, so Ernest was tied up fighting him while I took the others. I knew my special attacks were powerful, and I'd seen what they could do in the Mirage Chamber. But it was different in real life. I mean, it wasn't, but it was. It's terrifying how easily people can die. The first bandit, when I hit her, it was like the top half of her just exploded, unrecognizable chunks raining down in the mud. It didn't even land on me. The power blasted it all away. I remember thinking it was odd that I stayed clean.
It was bandits for me too, Clive said. They raid the remote farms and ranches in the Delta sometimes. They didn't know my family had an adventurous son or that he was visiting.
Clive's expression turned flinty.
They found out, he said quietly.
The group made their way back down to the bottom of the chamber, and Jason pointed out scorch marks, hard to spot against the dark stone. This is where we fought the Sanguine Horror, Jason said. Farah got her suppression collar off and blasted it to ash.
Quite a way to begin your journey as an adventurer,
Henrietta said. You know, I'm not sure I even knew what an adventurer was the last time I was here, Jason said. Rufus, Farah, and Gary only had a chance to start answering my many, many questions on the way back to the Vane Estate. It'll be interesting to see that place again. Chapter 12. Regretting It Later. Jason looked around the skimmer as it sailed smoothly over the rocky ground. It was an unremarkable patch of desert, but the walk between the mountain with its hidden sacrifice chamber and the Vane Estate had been an important time for Jason. After he had entered this world, that walk had been his first chance to slow down and get some answers from someone who didn't want to eat him or throw him in an evil blood pit. That was when he really met Rufus, with his solid dependability, and Gary, with his boisterous enthusiasm. Then there was Farah. She was the one who made the team work, bringing Gary into line when it was time for business and loosening Rufus up when he caused unnecessary tension. Smarter than either, she could have easily led a team of her own. She was wise enough to recognize that she didn't want to. She left that to Rufus while she engaged in her own pursuits. But Jason hadn't realized that at the time. He was still agape at the terrifying volcano powers she had used to annihilate the Sanguine Horror. He was only just getting to know the people who would be his first friends and mentors in his new world. Returning to the place it had all started, the path he had taken weighed heavily on his mind. It was a path of violence from the very beginning, so different from the safe, prosperous life he had known before that. That first night he had spoken to Rufus of his fears, of what a life of violence could turn him into. Rufus had not given him the reassurance he sought. Instead, Rufus told Jason that he would have to choose between holding on to his innocence or seizing his own destiny. He promised that a life of adventure would give Jason the world, but it would come at a price. That price was safety and the inescapable stain of bloody hands. Looking back, Rufus's promise had been kept. Jason had money, power, influence, precious friends and boon companions. But he had also faced danger, and been the danger faced by others. It could be considered a naivety, but he wondered if violence and killing had become too easy. The need for violence and the moral action was a harder thing to balance than he ever thought. He was proud of his growing capability, and largely of what he had done with it. But that pride also brought danger and regret. He'd gone along with everyone else to fight the Ustai tribe on their sand barge, and while they had certainly needed to be stopped, no more than a token effort had been put towards conciliation. That he didn't know how many people he killed that day was bad enough. That it had been for someone else's reasons made it all the worse. He thought about the men he killed in the shopping arcade. For all that he told himself it was justified, he could have easily escaped without hurting anyone. In his most honest moments, Jason knew he didn't kill them in self-defense or through some need to send a message. Not any message worth sending, anyway. It had been pride. They had the temerity to challenge him, and he had wanted, needed, to let everyone know that to come for him was to pay the price in blood. Thadwick Mercer was, at the core, a creature of pride. It was what made him so easy to wound and what drove every mistake he made. In the Reaper trials, Jason had come face to face with his own dark future, with the place that his pride would take him if he was not mindful of it. He could become too much like Thadwick. That he had been more successful than Thadwick made people more accepting of his pride, but that was a trap, something that made his pride more insidious, more dangerous. He had dismissed the Adventure Society's need for him to make a humble gesture, thinking himself clever for turning it to his own purpose. He was coming to realize that he had a greater need to find some humility than he thought. "Is that it?" Clive asked, next to him, as they crossed a rocky rise. When Jason had first spotted the Vane Estate those months ago, it had been an incongruous stretch of green. Rufus had remarked on what a waste of resources it was to maintain a temperate springtime in the middle of the desert. From the yellows and browns that had replaced the green, that price was apparently no longer being paid. "That's it," Jason said, double-checking his map. "It looks a bit worse for wear than the last time I was there."
"Stop the skimmer on the outside," Henrietta said, leaning forward to speak to Clive. We don't think there'll be anyone in residence, but the Adventure Society wants us checking for a reason. Best not announce ourselves too loudly.
As they approached, they found wilting plants, withered bushes, and half-barren trees, with their remaining leaves the brown, red, and yellow of deep autumn. The grounds of Vane Estate had been an English country garden held in a perpetual spring. As the energy maintaining the artificial climate depleted, that spring was passing through a deep autumn on the way to a sun-scorched desert winter. The pillars placed along the outside edge of the estate grounds still marked the border between the desert and the estate. Clive drew the skimmer up next to one. The team disembarked and stepped across the boundary. The air inside was still cooler than the desert, but hotter than what Jason remembered. Guided by Jason's map, they set off across the yellowing grass for the inner reaches of the sprawling estate.
"That's the hedge maze," Jason pointed out.
The towering hedge walls looked thinner than he remembered, the pale green hedges a pale reflection of its previous lush glory.
"I came into this world somewhere in the middle of that."
"Is that what made that big hole?" Sophie asked, pointing.
There was a ragged arch in the hedges. Mirrored in the hedges, they could see through it.
"No, that was Gary," Jason said. "He and Farrah sent their summons right through the middle of it. He said it was to sweep out any cultists, but I think it was mostly to annoy Anissa."
"Anissa?"
Henrietta asked. "Priestess of Purity. She was temporarily attached to Rufus's team. The church were the ones that sent them out here, which we think was all part of their game playing. I have to imagine an alliance between them and the Builder cult is an uneasy one."
"It seems dangerous for the cult to involve outsiders like that," Belinda said. "Too much chance of exposure. Getting too impressed with the cleverness of your own plans is a sure way to mess them up."
"The Builder cult apparently had their hearts set on this place," Jason said. "I can see how the combination of isolation, space, and comfort would appeal.
The matriarch of the house didn't like the Builders, though. Didn't approve of her son being part of the wrong cult."
"You seem to run into a lot of cultists," Humphrey said.
"Oh, that's nothing," Jason said. "Back in my world, they come to your door with pamphlets."
He turned his gaze back to the hedge maze. "I couldn't tell you exactly where I appeared in there. My arrival didn't seem to do any damage, and each place looks like every other in a maze, which is the whole point, I guess."
As they progressed through the estate, they saw more and more damage beyond, caused by the desert reclaiming the land. Someone had taken axe and flame to the place, breaking down outbuildings and torching gardens. When they reached the manor, they saw it had clearly taken the brunt of whatever ire had driven the Vandals. Only sections of burned and collapsed buildings still stood at the original height. Every section of wall, intact enough to fit it, had been painted with bright red graffiti, denouncing the inhabitants as blood drinkers and murderers.
"It seems word got out about the blood cult preying on the nearby towns and villages," Humphrey said. "There isn't much of a manor left to check out."
"There were some fairly extensive cellars," Jason said. "They may be intact."
The team made their way into the gutted ruin of the manor house.
"Careful of the parts that haven't collapsed yet," Henrietta warned.
They quickly discovered that the floors had been burned through, dumping the charred remains of the house above into blackened piles in the expansive cellar space. Jason managed to find the entrance to the underground ritual room, but the tunnel was packed tight with debris.
"Should we dig it out?" Humphrey asked.
"No," Henrietta said. "If we did it fast, what's left of the house would collapse on us. If we went carefully, it would take too long and might collapse anyway."
"There's another entrance," Jason said. "It's a bit of a crawl through a tight, wet tunnel, which is at the bottom of a well. After that, though, it's just a subterranean cave with a walkway, and you're there."
"I don't think we need to go that far," Henrietta said.
"Perhaps we should be thorough," Humphrey said.
"Agreed," Jason said.
"All right, we'll compromise," Henrietta said. "I'll sweep my aura sensors from above through that cave system. It should be between here and the center of the maze, right?"
"I can put us right over it using my map," Jason said.
"Maybe we should actually go down and take a look, though."
"By crawling through a wet tunnel at the bottom of a well," Neil said. "If there were still cultists here, they would have killed the people who came to burn this place down, or left if it happened before they came back."
"It does seem worthless as a place to hole up," Clive said. Without the manor, it's just a place they've been known to use in the past. That makes it all threat and no value. Even if they came here, they would have moved on.
That does make sense, Humphrey acknowledged.
Still, I'll do the aura sweep, just to be thorough, Henrietta said. We don't want to go regretting it later.
From within the edge of the estate grounds, Timos and Zato watched the skimmer disappear into the distance.
Consider this a formal apology, Zato said. I thought your ideas were overwrought. Burning down the manor and moving everyone into the cave, using so many of our resources, setting up the aura suppression. You protected our final chance. Even if we killed them, more would come looking.
Our work here will take months, Timos said. I knew someone would come eventually. I remained hidden in Greenstone for so long because I was more careful and more thorough than anyone believed I had reason to be. If the leadership hadn't felt Thadwick was worth risking exposure, I'd be hidden there still.
You've made a believer out of me, Zato said. You're in charge of keeping us secure. Whatever measures you think necessary, take them, so long as it doesn't compromise the work.
The team moved south from the Vane Estate, following the direction, but not the path, Jason had once taken to the Mistrun River. The direct route they had taken at the time had required most of a week on foot. The team anticipated taking about the same amount of time because of their zigzag route that would visit all the local towns and villages, with all the time it would take to clear off their adventure boards. Miles out from the Vane Estate, Jason was admonishing himself.
I should have sent Shade to scout the underground out, he said. I'm not used to having such a handy familiar.
I apologize for not putting myself forward myself, Shade said. I did not wish to overstep my bounds at this early stage in our collaboration.
Oh, please overstep, Jason said. I'm pretty much just bumbling through this whole adventurer thing with no real idea of what I'm doing.
That's true, Neil confirmed. He needs all the help he can get.
Thank you, Neil, Jason said flatly.
I mean, he's genuinely bad at this.
You can stop helping any time, Neil.
Oh, it's no trouble, Neil said.
The skimmer garnered attention as it arrived in the northeast quarry village, number 4. Such a magical conveyance was only ever used by adventurers or big shots coming to check out the quarry operations, so the villagers immediately knew that important visitors had come. The village was situated in a ring around a lake, fed by a channel that led from the nearby mountain that was the site of the quarries. A waterfall sprayed out of a hole in the mountainside, feeding the channel.
I was sprayed out of the mountain by that waterfall, Jason said, pointing it out.
Why would you jump into that spray?
Sophie asked.
I was up there taking a look when it turned off, Jason said. Me and another bloke were taking a look when it turned back on.
It's fed by an aperture, right?
Henrietta asked.
That's right, Jason said.
There were a number of instances of the apertures being interrupted, Clive said. It was the whole reason the expedition was formed in the first place. That must have been one of the earliest incidents. What happened exactly?
I was standing right next to the stream when it stopped, Jason said. The caretaker and I went for a closer look, and a shab came through. It was my first iron rank monster, and it was a huge, horrifying crab shark thing. I mean, I know they're awkward and quite rubbish now, but they look terrifying. We killed it, and then the water turned back on. It threw me, the other guy, and a bunch of extra shabs right off the side of the mountain. It was kind of awesome, actually. Most of the shabs died when they hit the ground, but a few survived by landing in the water, although they still took a good hit from that height. Rufus, Gary, and Farrah were off chasing the guy that set them up for the blood cult, so me, the other guy, and Colin finished the shabs off. Their arrival had been noticed, and the mayor was soon hurrying out to greet them.
Jason? Jason Asano?
G'day, Greg, Jason said, shaking the mayor's hand. He looked Jason up and down, taking in the dark combat robes, a sword on one hip, and a dagger on the other, his bandolier full of throwing darts.
Look at you, all intimidating, Greg said. Every inch the successful adventurer.
I wouldn't rush to conclusions, Jason said. I'm the reason my team got stuck with punishment detail.
Yes, I do recall your friend mentioning you would be by soon enough. Are they doing well?
Jason forcibly maintained the easy smile on his face as he recalled Farah's flippant remark. Let me introduce you to some new friends, he said, giving Greg all their names.
Geller? Greg asked. As in...
No, not those Gellers, Jason said. These two are from the other Geller family, very big in the peat trade. As the saying goes, if you want to find a Geller, look in that disgusting peat bog. These are some of the first to go into adventuring. Not the actual first, though. It was a shame about the others. Such an undignified way to die. Henrietta watched Jason from under raised eyebrows as Neil shook his head. Humphrey took it in stride, also shaking the mare's hand. Greg led them into the village, along the ring road that circled the lake. They drew a lot of attention, some people coming up and greeting Jason by name.
My daughter still has that spirit coin you gave her when you had her run from the monsters. She keeps it in a box, like a treasure.
Jason would share a few words with each villager before they let the intimidating cluster of adventurers move on.
Dan, Jason greeted one man.
We'll have to get some of that grilled giant worm.
Not this time of year, Dan said as he shook Jason's hand. We don't take them during their breeding season. I can do you a steamed pockmarked lizard if you like.
Sounds terrible, Jason said. I'm in.
I don't get it, Neil said, as they made their way to the adventure notice board. You were here for what? A couple of days, half a year ago?
Three, I think, Jason said. Two and a half, maybe.
How do you know all these people?
You aristocrats are all about dignity and status, Clive said. We regular folk appreciate someone who doesn't climb up on their high heidel. And say what you will about Jason, it's clear that if he was ever on a high heidel, he fell off.
And landed on his head, Neil muttered. The team found the adventure board notices and Henrietta looked them over.
There's nothing impressive here, she said. If you like Asano, you can stay here while the rest of us handle these and pick you up after. You seem to have some catching up to do.
That would be nice, Jason said. I can call in on an old friend.
3 days 6 months ago, Neil said again. How do you have old friends?
The Magic Society have actually been looking into it, Jason said.
It turns out that once you cross a certain charisma threshold, it starts warping reality around you.
Just to be clear, Clive said to the others, the Magic Society has not been doing that.
Jason was sitting in the yard of Hiram, the caretaker of the local astral space aperture. They had been thrown off the mountain together and fought the monsters that emerged from it. His home faced onto the lake, where his granddaughter splashed about with some of the neighbor's children.
Things here have been just fine, Hiram said. I want to hear all about your exciting adventures.
I might have had a close call or two, Jason said.
There was actually something of a contest for adventurers that... Jason trailed off as rainbow light started shining from the middle of the lake. He leapt out of the lounger, his stern gaze locked onto that light. It grew rapidly, to a size indicating a bronze or possibly even silver manifestation.
What is it with this village?
Hiram, you need to evacuate. Everyone, the whole village. If you have some kind of shelter, put them in it. Otherwise, just get everyone as far away as you can.
How long before it finishes manifesting?
Hiram asked. If it's bronze rank, Jason said, maybe quarter of an hour? I can probably handle that, though. If it's silver, you have twice as long, but there won't be anything I can do. Hiram nodded and headed for the children who had stopped playing and were looking at the beautiful rainbow vortex. Chapter 13 SWAT. Jason extended his shadow arm to the roof of Hiram's house as his shadow cloak appeared around him. He reduced his weight and retracted the arm, pulling himself lightly onto the roof. He looked around the village and saw people scrambling to get their families and go. They knew what a monster manifestation meant, and none of them had seen anything as large as the rainbow vortex now shining over the surface of the lake.
The rest of his team was out of voice communication range. They would be back sometime in the next few hours, depending on how long it took them to chase down the monsters they were hunting. Jason turned his grim gaze back to the vortex. It was definitely going to be silver rank. That would give the villagers more time, but it wouldn't be enough. There was no way to evacuate the whole village in half an hour, not with children and the elderly. Someone was going to have to buy them time, and the only person on hand was him. Jason had no illusions of defeating a silver rank monster. He was confident against a bronze ranked one, even a bronze rank essence user, if they were of the mediocre variety that clung to Greenstone's lower rungs. A silver ranked monster, though, was not something he could beat. Even with his powers to reduce the resistances of an enemy, his afflictions would spatter off anything silver rank like rain off an umbrella. Essence users advanced in a well-rounded manner, with all their attributes going up with rank. Even if they had no powers to boost them, every essence user would be faster and stronger than they were at the rank before. Monsters did not conform to that balance. Some were fast, some were strong, others were physically weak, yet possessed potent magical powers. If he was going to accomplish anything more than get ignored or killed, Jason needed the silver rank monster to be big and slow. If it was nice and lumbering, there was a good chance he could kite the monster away from the villagers. If it was fast or had some strange powers, it might well kill Jason in just moments before rampaging through the fleeing villagers. Jason watched the rainbow light and waited, knowing that life or death for himself and hundreds of others was just a matter of fortune. This was the third magic manifestation Jason had witnessed, after the Awakening Stone and the other silver rank monster in the city. Silver rank monsters were rare in the low magic region, yet he had been close to two of them manifesting in a month. It was possible the monster surge was imminent after all. He had been told that no two manifestations happened exactly the same way, although he was having trouble getting excited for it, with his mind dwelling on his likely imminent death. Eventually, the rainbow vortex started to shrink, coalescing into a sphere that grew brighter and brighter, until Jason had to shield his eyes against it. He could see the village washed in blue light, as if a cerulean sun had appeared over the lake. Then the light dimmed, and he was able to look again. He watched the sphere of blue light drop into the water and vanish. There was an odd stillness from Jason's perspective, although in the distance he could still see villagers scrambling to flee. The light show had done nothing to allay their fears. Around Jason, though, all was quiet. The silent moment passed. A humongous plume of water erupted from the lake, geysering into the air like a bomb had gone off in the depths. Waves rippled outward, rocking the boats tied up at jetties along the shore. Lake water fell like rain, and Jason feared a repeat of what happened in the city with a small army of elementals. Jason strained his aura senses at every pool and puddle that was forming, looking for manifesting elementals. The water seemed blessedly inert, aside from the single silver rank aura bulging out from the center of the lake. His eyes tracked to the very center of the lake, where not all the water had fallen back down. Some had taken the form of an elemental, standing on the surface of the lake. This elemental was unlike the formless blobs he had seen in the past. It resembled a statue, carved from water and filled with chunks of rock floating through its liquid body. It looked like a person, an armored woman with greaves, breastplate, helmet, and even a shield in one hand. In the other was a long whip, trailing from her grip down to the lake. The whip was filled with what looked like razor-sharp stones along its length. Quest, evacuation. The villagers of Northeast Quarry Village number 4 need time to get their people away from the monster that appeared in their midst. You are all that stands between them and a quick death. Objective: delay Oasis Tyrant until the villagers escape or help arrives. Reward: Amulet of the Dark Guardian. Jason let out a breath, realizing that all the news was good. Normally an elemental was a bad matchup for him, but anything at silver rank would be immune to his afflictions as an elemental anyway. Elementals of the water and earth variety were not known for speed, which was the province of wind and fire types. Most importantly, it was alone. It would be powerful, but all he had to do was distract the one monster for as long as the villagers took to get away. If he could keep it from going after the villagers until they were gone, then that would be a win. If he could do it long enough for the others to get back, it would be a triumph. Henrietta was the only one who would have the power to fight the monster, and even that would be no easy fight. Jason called out Shade and Gordon. Colin would be most useful remaining in his bloodstream, healing the injuries Jason would inevitably be taking. Shade, I'll be relying on you for movement. One of you stays with me, keep your other bodies where I can jump to them at need. The villagers are escaping to the north, so we'll start by heading south. We'll use the buildings ringing the lake for cover and slowly work our way around. By the time we reach where the villagers are now, they should be gone. Gordon, stick with me. When I shadow jump, catch up as quick as you can. Jason drew his sword and looked at the elemental. Despite not having eyes, it turned its head as if panning its gaze around the village. Gordon, grab its attention. Twin beams blasted out from the eyes, orbiting the Avatar of Doom, signaling the start of the fight. The elemental, standing on the surface of the lake, turned its gaze from the village to hone in on Gordon. The elemental was a towering figure, three times the height of the house Jason was standing on. Just as he had hoped, its steps were slow and ponderous, even though it walked over the surface of the water as if it weighed nothing. Once it drew closer, however, Jason discovered he hadn't gotten off as lightly as he believed. The elemental flicked its tree trunk thick whip of water and razor rocks in Jason's direction. The elemental might have been slow, but the whip was not. Jason barely had time to leap off the roof before the whip smashed through the front wall of Hiram's house. As it yanked the whip back again, the roof was torn in half, what was left collapsing into the interior. Gordon had followed Jason from Hiram's rooftop to that of the next cottage by turning into a nebula cloud of blue and orange energy. In cloud form, he made a rapid dash through the air before returning to his normal state. Jason was able to make such a huge leap to the next rooftop through the jumping magic on his boots. At that moment, he sent a silent blessing in the direction of the Burt brothers, Gilbert and Filbert, who had found them for him. The fight between Jason and the elemental was not a fight at all. It was a cat-and-mouse game, a housekeeper swatting at a skittering bug. Gordon would emerge from between a pair of buildings and fire beams at the elemental. Jason would use that distraction to extend his shadow arm and land a blow with his sword, striking at the whip. While the elemental used it as if it were a separate weapon, it was part of the elemental itself. It didn't really matter, since the sword was all but harmless. The goal was to hold the elemental's attention. After attacking, Jason would vanish into Shade before Shade himself flickered away like the shadow of a cloud. The game was not an easy one. Because the whip was an animate part of the elemental, it was not bound by the motion of an actual whip. It lashed and flailed, snaked, and sought in pursuit of its elusive prey. As Jason and Gordon hid amongst the trees and garden, homes and shops, the passage of the whip devastated them all. Cottages were smashed to rubble, trees slapped right out of the ground in the creature's attempt to swat down Jason and his familiars. Jason ducked amongst the trees and buildings, sprinting, leaping, teleporting. It was close call after close call as the whip snaked around or smashed right through the obstructions he was using as cover. He was continually forced to find new ground to hide in as the monster smashed its way around the village in a circle. Jason realized that he was burning through village faster than the villagers could evacuate it. The contest was not just whether Jason could survive, but whether the villagers could evacuate while there was village to evacuate from. From his first day of training, Gary had been hammering movement skills into Jason, and Sophie had taught him even more. She seemed to have a preternatural sense for motion, helping him incorporate each new power in efficient, innovative ways. All that training and practice demonstrated its value as he was pushed to the limit of his abilities and beyond. In the crucible of action, Jason was pulling off wild stunts he had barely learned for the simple reason that he had to. He wasn't even sure he physiologically had adrenaline anymore, but it felt like his whole body was flush with it. He would leap up high, floating with his cloak, as he tugged himself through the air by gripping a tree or building with his shadow arm. It allowed him to dodge the crashing whip as it tried to slap him into the ground. He dashed wildly through the increasingly ruined village, retaliating only enough to make sure the elemental kept coming after him. The pinpricks of his sword weren't truly hurting it, but seemed to annoy and frustrate as it became more wild in thrashing the whip. Gordon was a loyal companion, following Jason's wild rush through the ruins of the once beautiful village. Gordon's normal form was not swift, so he spent more time in his rapid nebulous cloud form than not. Meanwhile, Shade was constantly repositioning his bodies to give Jason places to teleport to. One of Shade's bodies was the first casualty, left behind as Jason barely teleported through it in time. The whip did not have any inherent power to affect incorporeal objects, but the Silver Rank monster was so infused with magic that it ripped apart the Iron Rank familiar. Gordon was the second casualty. His cloud dash was fast, but his reflexes were otherwise sluggish. He took one glancing hit, then a second, before a square blow slapped him into nothingness, his vessel dissipating entirely. Jason increasingly felt the pressure. Losing one of the shades hampered his mobility, and he no longer had Gordon as a secondary distraction. When he had the chance, he glanced to the evacuating villagers. His fears were confirmed. He wasn't buying enough time. The village was being wrecked faster than they could vacate it, the destruction moving closer and closer to their evacuation point. Just as despair began to well up, he received blessed relief.
Contact. Clive Standish has entered communication range. Contact. Henrietta Geller has entered communication range. Contact. Sophie Wexler has entered communication range. Contact. Belinda Callahan has entered communication range. Contact. Neil Devone has entered communication range. Contact. Humphrey Geller has entered communication range.
Help! He screamed through the voice chat. Silver Rank Monster!
Henrietta's voice came back through the voice chat in a stream of expletives.
She means we're on our way, Humphrey said. How long do you think you can hold out?
Frankly, I'm surprised I lasted this,
Jason said, before cutting himself off to duck under a sweeping whip strike that shattered the wall behind him and showered him in debris.
If you could hear extraneous sounds, Jason said as he sprinted off, you would have just heard a house collapse. Can't really talk.
Stay sharp and stay alive, Asano, Henrietta said. We're on our way.
Renewed hope filled Jason with fresh determination. The villagers needed him to keep the monster away from them, and he was running out of village, so he was forced to stay longer in the already wrecked sections where the cover wasn't as plentiful and the elemental could more easily track his movements. He took greater risks and more desperate chances. Finally, one of the increasingly close calls was too close. The whip found its mark. It was little more than a glancing blow, but Jason felt like he'd been hit by a truck, his body skipping like a stone across the ground before crashing into a wall. Barely able to move, he reached down and took a vial from his potion belt. The enchantment on the belt protecting them from incidental damage was one of his oldest items, and he silently thanked Gary for insisting he buy it. Thumbing the stopper from the vial, he tipped it down his throat.
Item: Lesser Miracle Potion. Iron Rank: Legendary. Salvation in a bottle. Consumable. Potion. Effect: fully restore health, mana, and stamina. This potion is only effective on normal and iron rank individuals. The magic of this potion lingers in the body longer than normal potions, preventing additional healing and recovery items from being effective for a longer period.
Jason experienced a sensation unlike anything he had ever felt. Power, strength, and vitality combined into a raging river crashing through his body. It was performing at a packed-out arena, winning a grand final. It was being born while having an orgasm. He vaulted to his feet, ignoring the rents in his combat robes. The whip was coming in to finish the job, but Jason suddenly felt like he could beat the elemental single-handed. Fortunately, that delusion passed quickly, and he got out of the way of the whip. His shadow hands snaked out, much like the whip that was chasing him, to snatch up his dropped sword and continue the fight. Over the course of the chase, Jason had landed many hits with his sword and built up considerable charges of extra force damage in the blade. He estimated it was more than any previous encounter, yet the iron rank weapon took no more than thumbnail-sized divots out of the silver rank elemental. Jason continued his mad dash, buying as much time as he could as his situation deteriorated. Shade's second body was destroyed. Then his third. In Shade's absence, he was conjuring and reconjuring his cloak as he teleported through it to any shadow he could see. The reinvigorating effect of the potion was spent as he burned through stamina and mana both, riding more and more on the edge. Hiding had become a constant state of evasion, his body riddled with cuts from debris smashed into flying shards. He no longer had time to check on the villagers or to slow down the destruction of their village. The end came when he sensed a bundle of new auras approaching. He recognized his team and let out a weary laugh. That moment's distraction proved costly as the whip slammed into him. A stone shard within the whip tore across his torso as it sent him careening through the air. He was already unconscious when he hit the wall like a bug on a windshield. Chapter 14. The Purpose of the Adventure Society. Jason returned to consciousness to find a small face looking down at him.
Grandpa!
She yelled at brain-rattling volume.
He's awake!
He's also a little delicate,
Jason croaked as Hiram's granddaughter skipped off to find her grandfather. He brushed aside the waiting system messages for the moment to push himself into a sitting position and look around. He was in one of the cottages in the village from the looks of it, but not Hiram's. That had been the first one destroyed under the whip that slept through the village like a wrecking ball. The bed he was lying on was in a small bedroom with a large open window letting in pleasant fresh air. As he was glancing around, Hiram entered the room, along with Humphrey and Neil. Neil pushed his way to the front and started examining Jason by pulling a crystal from his dimensional satchel and waving it over Jason. Jason looked down as he did, spotting a scar running from his right hip to the middle of his torso on the other side. Neil spotted his gaze.
Nothing I can do about that, Neil said. Soul scar.
Physically, you're fine, just very depleted. Don't go trying to rush your recovery with stamina and mana potions, though. You've been asleep for 4 days, so take it slow.
4 days?
I'm not sure you realize how close to death you came, Neil said. We almost fed you a lesser miracle potion before I checked for potion toxicity and realized you were still getting over one. The state you were in, another one would have finished you off. If it weren't for your outworlder body and that familiar inside you, I doubt you'd have lived long enough for my healing to take effect.
Thanks, Neil, Jason said. And thanks to you too, Colin. What about the monster?
Henrietta took care of it, Humphrey said. It wasn't easy, though. She lost a couple of her familiars and had to resummon them after.
I did too, Jason said. I'll need to get the materials, though. I only have the bronze rank equivalents I bought for when I rank up.
He swung his feet off the bed and held out a hand. Humphrey took it and helped him to his feet, supporting him when he staggered.
Take it easy, Neil said.
You're still recovering from all that healing. We're not going anywhere for at least another day while you recover. I'm guessing you're hungry?
Yeah, now you say it.
Spirit coins, one every hour or so to replenish your reserves. No food for at least a day.
How flexible is the no food thing?
Not flexible at all, Neil said. Normally, I'd tell you that if you want to mess up your recovery, that's your business. But you're part of this team. We have to rely on you, so get it right. Jason gave Neil a grateful smile.
All right, mate. The food stays stashed in my storage space for now.
You don't have to go that far, Neil said. The rest of us can eat food while you watch and suck on a spirit coin.
Oh, that's cold.
How are you feeling?
Tingly? Weak?
Jason looked himself up and down. He was wearing only the silk boxer shorts he'd had on when he was knocked unconscious. The combat robes and underclothes were gone, as was the blood and sweat he was certain had stained them during the fight. Someone had clearly stripped him down and tipped some crystal wash over him.
That's normal, Neil said. As long as you keep eating spirit coins and focus on rest, you'll be back to full strength in a day or two. I'd recommend using the time to meditate.
Jason spotted his combat robe on a wall hanger, dangling from a peg. Like him, 4 days had been enough for it to recover as the self-repair magic restored it to pristine condition. Also like him, it had been cleaned.
Thank you for what you did,
Hiram said, as Jason took the robe and placed it into his inventory.
Was it enough?
Jason asked. A dark mist appeared around his body, obscuring him for a moment before disappearing, revealing Jason changed into casual clothes. Did everyone get away?
There was a lot of debris flying around, even at a distance, Hiram said.
There were a lot of cuts and scrapes, but your team's healer saw to everyone after he had you settled. Hard worker, that one. We did lose a pair of elderly people. Their family were out of the village, and with everyone in a mad panic, no one checked on them. Jason hung his head.
I'm sorry, Hiram.
You have nothing to be sorry for, Hiram admonished. Nothing at all. Do not even try and apologize after fighting a monster like that.
I wouldn't call it a fight, Jason said. More like a mad scramble to not die.
You did better than anyone had any right to expect, Humphrey said. Not many Iron Rankers would have even tried what you did.
You would have done it, Jason said.
I wouldn't, Neil volunteered. I'd have run as fast as I could while complaining I didn't have powers to run faster.
I get that, Jason said with a chuckle. That's pretty much what I did.
Jason took out an iron spirit coin and slipped it into his mouth. He grimaced at the ozone taste.
Good boy, Neil said, and Jason groaned in complaint.
Feel ready to go out? Hiram asked. There's a lot of people waiting to thank you.
No thanks, Jason said. Let Belinda turn into me and they can thank her.
If you're going to run around playing hero, Neil said, you'll have to accept people treating you like one.
What Neil means is that the people here want to show you their gratitude, Henrietta said, walking into the room. Part of the job is to let them. They need to know that the Adventure Society will be there when they need it most. The purpose of the Adventure Society, after all, is to let people live without living in fear.
She glanced at her brother, then turned back to Jason.
Our family has certain views on what makes a real adventurer, she said. A lot of adventurers get caught up in the money and power of what we do and put aside the responsibility. You're a real adventurer, Asano, and let no one tell you differently. How are you, by the way?
He's as well as can be expected, Neil said. He's still a day or two from getting back on the road, though.
Can't he rest sitting in the skimmer? Henrietta asked.
It would be better if he has the freedom to walk about a bit, and the peace to meditate without the skimmer's air intake roaring behind him.
All right, Henrietta said. Are you ready to go out and meet with people, Asano? You might as well get it over with.
No, I'd like a little time to gather myself. I'll be out in a minute.
The others shuffled out of the small room, and Jason sat back on the bed, turning his attention to the system messages he had banished to the periphery of his vision.
Quest, evacuation. Objective complete. Delay, oasis tyrant, until the villagers escape or help arrives. Quest complete. 100 silver spirit coins have been added to your inventory. 1,000 bronze spirit coins have been added to your inventory. 10,000 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Amulet of the Dark Guardian has been added to your inventory.
Jason took the item reward from his inventory. It hung on a chain made of intricate links of carved obsidian. The amulet itself depicted a replica of Jason's personal crest, a cloak filled with daylight sky, surrounded by the night.
Item, Amulet of the Dark Guardian. Growth, Iron Rank, Legendary. A protective amulet with the power of a shadowy guardian. Jewelry, necklace. This item is bound to you and cannot be used by anyone else. Effect, for each instance of an affliction applied to an enemy, gain an instance of Guardian's Blessing. You may bestow all instances of Guardian's Blessing upon another person by touch. Guardian's Blessing, Boon, Holy. Instances are consumed to absorb damage from any source. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. For each instance consumed, gain an instance of Blessing's Bounty. Blessing's Bounty, Heal over time, Holy, Stacking. Heal over time. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Growth conditions. Bronze. Bound user must be at least bronze rank. 100 bronze rank barrier quintessence gems. 100 bronze rank renewal quintessence gems. 100 bronze rank balance quintessence gems. 100 bronze rank malign quintessence gems. 1,000 bronze rank spirit coins. Ritual of bronze ascension.
Jason clasped the chain behind his back, slipping the amulet under his clothes.
I think you and I are going to get along just fine.
It did mean more materials he had to buy, however.
He had blown most of his money on getting materials ready for bronze rank, plus the resources he had been literally pouring into the cloud flask. He had brought two sets of bronze rank summoning materials for each of his familiars, in case their vessels were destroyed, but he hadn't expected it to happen while he was still iron rank. Replacing the materials to resummon Shade would be bearable, but even the iron rank materials for Gordon were onerous. Fortunately, the quest had given him a monetary haul, which should put a dent in his costs. He also had the loot from the elemental. Neil had used his own looting power on it after Henrietta defeated it. The team decided that Jason and Henrietta should split the loot, as both had expensive summoning rituals to perform as a direct result. Along with the spirit coins, Henrietta had laid claim to a magical bronze rank whip made of water filled with razor-sharp stones. Jason received an epic rarity Discord essence. He turned to the other system message. New title, Resolute. The damage you suffered in your stand against a much more powerful enemy has marked your soul. Your resistance to the suppressive force of higher-ranked auras is increased. Your aura signature has changed. Your unflinching resolve can be detected if your aura is examined by an aura-sensing power or when projecting your aura. Jason unbuttoned his shirt and traced his fingers along the scar, from his right hip, across his abdomen, and curving a little way around the left side of his torso. It was strange to see a scar that looked healed, yet he had only found there minutes before. Once again, he had edged right up to death. The more his powers grew, the greater the dangers he faced. This time had been a greater escalation than he had been looking for, though. He thought back to those moments when he was waiting for the monster to manifest, unsure if he would live or die. In the end, he was lucky with the monster that appeared. Too many times it had been luck that kept him alive. From the beginning, he had become an adventurer to seize control of his own fate. He had to get stronger, strong enough to face any challenge. He stood up, his face full of steely resolve. Then he got dizzy and sat down again, before getting up more slowly. The waterfall sprayed out of the mountain, falling into the pool at the base, flowing into the channel that fed the lake around which the village was built. The force of the water sent it tumbling through the air, instead of washing down the cliff face, leaving a space under the waterfall at the base of the cliff. It was a favourite play area of the village children, jumping from rocks into the pool. They were all strong swimmers, which was an oddity for children of the desert. None of the children were present, however, most of the families having already left the village. Those still nearby weren't letting their children out of their sight. With only a handful of homes left, most of the villagers had already headed for the fortified town where the regional villagers waited out monster surges. Jason had visited that town himself once, where Rufus had introduced him to the adventuring boards. The remaining villagers occupied the small cluster of intact buildings. Leaving a small bedroom to Jason alone was a grand accommodation, given the circumstances. They had never intended to stay the night, so Jason had not set up his cloud house before the fight. Quarry operations would not be resuming until the village was once again in a state to support them. Those that stayed behind were the mayor, a quarry operations manager, and the other town leaders who were planning out the reconstruction of the village. Their plans were very up in the air, however, with the uncertainty surrounding the overdue monster surge. Jason's experiences made him more comfortable with people being annoyed, confused, or both than with sincere displays of gratitude. He did a lot of smiling and handshaking, while in his head he was waiting for a shoe that never dropped. Eventually, Henrietta rescued him, telling the people that he needed more rest. Hiram quietly suggested the spot by the mountain, knowing Jason was going to go off and meditate. He sat alone on a wet rock, meditating as errant waterfall spray splashed him with pleasant coolness. He let his mind drift, and the weariness of his body fade away. Periodically, he would emerge from a trance state, slip a spirit coin into his mouth, and then resume meditation. System messages appeared periodically, which he ignored until he felt a wellspring of power building up, filling his chest with an uncomfortable pressure. He coughed up phlegm speckled with blood, which splashed into the water. Blue-grey light started to shine from within his body. Ability, Hand of the Reaper, Dark, has reached Iron, 2, 100%. Ability, Hand of the Reaper, Dark, has reached Iron, 3, 00%.
all Dark Essence abilities have reached Iron 3. Linked attribute, Speed, has increased from Iron 2 to Iron 3. Progress to Bronze rank, 50%. 4 of 4 essences complete. Many of Jason's most advanced abilities had finally seen real movement in the wake of the fight, including the Midnight Eyes power, which, in spite of barely being used, was within grasping distance of becoming Jason's first bronze rank power. The sun was going down, and it was time to return to the village where he had set up the cloud house. Before he left, though, he opened up his character sheet to look at his progress. Jason Asano. Attributes. Power, Blood. Iron 7. Speed, Dark. Iron 3. Spirit, Doom. Iron 3. Recovery, Sin. Iron 7. Essences, 4 of 4. Dark, Speed, 5 of 5. Midnight Eyes, Special Ability, Iron 9, 99%. Cloak of Night, Special Ability, Iron 9, 12%. Path of Shadows, Special Ability, Iron 8, 41%. Hand of the Reaper, Special Ability, Iron 3, 00%. Shadow of the Reaper, Familiar, Iron 3, 09%. Blood, Power, 5 of 5. Blood Harvest, Spell, Iron 7, 41%. Leech Bite, Special Attack, Iron 8, 14%. Feast of Blood, Spell, Iron 7, 02%. Sanguine Horror, Familiar, Iron 8, 89%. Hemorrhage, Spell, Iron 8, 92%. Sin, Recovery, 5 of 5. Punish, Special Attack, Iron 8, 45%. Feast of Absolution, Spell, Iron 7, 63%. Sin Eater, Special Ability, Iron 7, 69%. Hegemony, Aura, Iron 9, 18%. Castigate, Spell, Iron 8, 21%. Doom, Spirit, 5 of 5. Inexorable Doom, Spell, Iron 8, 97%. Punition, Spell, Iron 8, 24%. Blade of Doom, Spell, Iron 8, 26%. Verdict, Spell, Iron 6, 94%. Avatar of Doom, Familiar, Iron 3, 12%. He was now well and truly on the path to bronze. His newest powers hadn't been increasing much during training, but the regular hunts as they travelled around, clearing adventure notices, had seen a surge. By the time they reached the heights of his older powers, it would probably take bronze rank monsters to really push him over the line in anything like a timely fashion. He got up and meandered back into the village, walking barefoot across the lush grass that grew alongside the channel, in defiance of the desert surrounds. He was struck again by the destruction visited upon the village. If the sudden preponderance of silver rank monsters was any indication, he would have all the monsters he needed to rank up in the very near future. Chapter 15. Elven Storage Solutions. The cloud house had taken the form of a large two-story building of desert stone. Jason found Clive and Belinda out front, working on the scattered collection of parts that used to be the skimmer. After getting Jason's cry for help over voice chat, Clive had used a quick and dirty ritual to overcharge the skimmer. It had brought them to the village in the nick of time, but also taken a toll on the vehicle. While Jason recovered, he and Belinda had been trying to repair it using the random collection of materials he happened to have in his storage space. "How's it going?" Jason asked.
"We've figured out something that should last us the rest of the trip," Clive said. "It'll put all the burden on the parts that are still good, though."
"Which means the skimmer will be well and truly done by the time we get to the river," Belinda added. "It might not even make it, depending on how much chasing around after monster notices we do."
"We'll have it ready to go in the morning," Clive said.
"Jason, have you seen Sophie yet?" Belinda asked.